Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. As Myanmar's humanitarian situation worsens following the military coup there, the UN Secretary-General has welcomed the appointment of a special envoy for the country by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Antonio Guterres said in a statement that the appointment of Erwan Yosef from Brunei as mediator marked an important step towards implementation of ASEAN's commitment to the end of the crisis in Myanmar. Mr. Guterres also renewed his call for the country's military to step back from violence and repression. The will of the people must be respected, and the state's Tatmadaw forces must act in the interests of peace, sustainable development, and human rights, Mr. Guterres insisted on Wednesday. It's been 6 months since the military-led coup in Myanmar on the 1st of February, which prevented the country's elected officials from forming a new government. The violence that followed has left more than 900 people dead, most of whom were civilians, with thousands arrested and detained. According to the report, Mr. Erwan has been tasked with ending violence and opening dialogue between Myanmar's military rulers and their opponents, and to oversee the delivery of humanitarian aid. Hopeful news from Africa now, where almost 90 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines have now been allocated to the continent under the UN-partnered COVAX scheme. Announcing the development on Thursday, the World Health Organization, or WHO, said that the aim was to deliver 520 million doses to Africa by the end of 2021. The African Union also plans to deliver at least 16 million single-shot Johnson & Johnson doses to African countries, also by the end of September. After a tough 3 months, we're seeing more positive prospects in terms of vaccine shipments to Africa, said WHO's Dr. Fiona Atawebi, who blamed unsteady supplies as the main reason why vaccine rollout has been slow to date. As shipments ramp up, it's crucial that African countries put comprehensive vaccination strategies in place to swiftly and efficiently protect the most vulnerable, the WHO insisted. Africa has received 91 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines so far. About 24 million people, just 1.7% of Africa's population, are fully vaccinated. To meet the end-of-year goal of fully vaccinating 30% of Africa's population, up to 729 million more doses will be needed. The number of refugees given shelter in safe host countries plunged last year because of pandemic border restrictions, which continue to hamper the resettlement of vulnerable people. That's one of the findings of a new report by the UN Refugee Agency, the UNHCR, and the World Bank, which said on Thursday that 64,000 asylum seekers started new lives abroad in host countries in 2019, but only 22,800 did so last year. The downward trend has continued in 2021, with only 4,500 people resettled from January to March, while 57 countries still deny access to non-nationals and 73 have restricted access. According to the UNHCR World Bank report, the socio-economic impact of COVID-19 has affected almost every aspect of the lives of refugees and other forcibly displaced people, particularly those living outside camps. Citing data from 8 refugee-hosting countries before COVID-19, the report estimated that refugees were 60% more likely than host populations to be working in sectors that were highly likely to be impacted by the pandemic, such as accommodation and food services, manufacturing and retail. In Kenya's Kalabeye camp, researchers also noted that unemployment among refugees fell by around 75%, compared with pre-pandemic levels, 3 times higher than national job losses. They also warned that COVID-19 hit refugees and host communities equally hard elsewhere, not least in Yemen, where access to healthcare for everyone has not recovered to the level it was before the pandemic started amid the ongoing conflict. Katie Dartford, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Yeah.
Welcome to Pre-Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and happy August.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and this is the August 5th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka is our engineer producing the show in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall. That's the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And the Freedom From Religion Foundation is the producer of this weekly show. And we are airing around the country in several cities and also a podcast. And FFRF works as a state church watchdog and also as a national membership organization for people who are personally free from religion. So we work to keep religion out of government as our godless constitution requires, and we also get together with like-minded people to try to make sure that reason prevails in our social policy. And you can join us at ffrf.org.
How do atheists deal with death, their own death and the death of a loved one? We're going to talk about that today. In the second half of our show, we're going to speak with a former Christian minister who's now a licensed mental health counselor, Candace Gorham. We've talked with her about her 2013 book, The Ebony Exodus Project, and now she has a new book. It's called On Death, Dying, and Disbelief.
And The Ebony Exodus Project has to do with black women leaving religion. Yesterday on our live Facebook TV show, Ask an Atheist, we asked the question, are white evangelicals dying out? Dan and I spoke with Robert P. Jones, the founder and CEO of Public Religion Research Institute, about their new 2020 census on religion.
We've talked with Robert Jones on this show a couple of weeks ago, but on the live TV show yesterday, we were able to show PRRI's amazing maps, their county-by-county maps of religion all across the country, 3,000-plus counties. They have maps, for example, of religious diversity, black Protestants, Hispanic Catholics, Mormons, white evangelicals, and other religious groups, including the unaffiliated, the non-religious, which has been growing faster than any other religious group, especially faster than white evangelicals, which are now shrinking rapidly.
And we're not really a religious group, but it's by identification. Robert Jones told us that part of the reason for the decline in Christianity, especially white evangelicals, is the fact that younger people are becoming much less religious.
The median age of white evangelicals has risen from 53 to 56. So that tells you that as they're shrinking, they're getting older. So the only way that happens is that you're losing younger people. And in the image you've got up here, you can really see that what we're seeing is there are many, many more unaffiliated among younger Americans today, even than there were, you know, even go back like, you know, several decades. Like one question I always get is, well, isn't it true that people in their 20s are always less affiliated with churches? And that's true. But if you go back and we look at snapshots from 86, 96, 2006, 2016, just kind of march our way up, what we see is we go back to 1986, people in their 20s were still only 10 to 12% unaffiliated. And today, it is nearly 4 in 10 of that group of under the age of 30 that are unaffiliated. Okay. So it's really a phenomenon we haven't seen before.
And you can see all of those amazing charts and maps at their website at prri.org. Go to the PRRI 2020 Census on Religion on that page, and you can click on your own county to see the heat map, as he called it, of religion and non-religion in your area. You can catch that entire show on FFRF's Ask an Atheist YouTube channel, including the many questions from the viewing audience.
And tune in next week to the live show and ask a question of your own. It airs noon central on Wednesdays, almost every Wednesday, on FFRF's Facebook page at facebook.com/FFRF. I'm not going to spell that out. You can just go to our Facebook page.
Number 4, FFRF.
Yeah. And next week's topic, now I've forgotten, it's going to be very interesting. Mark Dan's going to do it, our BC lobbyist.
Right. So in the news.
So, in the news, of course, is the COVID surge and the debates over mandating vaccinations, which the Freedom From Religion Foundation, of course, is squarely behind. And so we've been involved in several tussles here. We, in the state of Wisconsin, last Friday, excoriated our state senator, Steve Nass, because he has a reckless anti-vax proposal for University of Wisconsin campuses. He's in charge of the Rules Committee, and he is basically micromanaging the university and saying any COVID mitigation policy that you adopt, our Rules Committee has to approve. And they voted on that Tuesday. They are a majority of Republican anti-science extremists, and it is unclear whether they're even going to let the University of Wisconsin-Madison mask up. And so we have written him, we did an action alert with our members, and we also now have written the Board of Regents of the University of Wisconsin, because FFRF is based in Madison, Wisconsin. The UW-Madison is 40 to 50,000 students. We do not welcome the fact that tens of thousands of students may be coming back this month to our fair city unvaccinated, and that the university is doing nothing about it. So we think there should be pushback, even though the legislature is making it difficult for the university. They need to advocate for mandating vaccines. And
did you say that Nass is the congressman who has the big Christian cross in his window?
The state legislator who used to have a big cross in his window when he had a ground floor window. He still has a cross in his office. So a number of state university systems, including in California, Illinois, Colorado, New York, have already adopted rational measures to require students to be vaccinated. And there are countless other individual colleges and universities, including the private Catholic Marquette in Milwaukee and private Lawrence University in Wisconsin, that have imposed vaccination mandates. And we are glad to see in the city of Madison, in Dane County, that they're requiring employees to be vaccinated. But Dan, did you know that the school board is not requiring teachers to be vaccinated in Madison? So all over the country, there's different rules going on. There are different levels of government controlling these in different states. But the public school exists to educate. And this is an education moment. This is an educational moment that is life and death involving our public health. And everybody listening, if you have not written a letter, use social media, called up local people who are not mandating vaccines at the governmental level, your schools, you should complain. We have the remedy at hand. That remedy is not masking. That remedy is a vaccine. I mean, the masking may be required until we get this under control, but we have a magic bullet. We need to use it. And I think that's the only other thing I can say is that we had a hallelujah moment when the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals on Monday did not enjoin Indiana University there in Bloomington from continuing its vaccination mandate. Students have sued, and it won. The university prevailed at the district level, but the students are appealing to the appeals court. And they drew a very conservative panel, Reagan and two Trump appointees. And it was a unanimous decision, very strongly worded, that they were going to let this vaccinations proceed while they hear the whole court case. And it was a really fabulously logical decision, pointing out that there's a 1905 Supreme Court case saying that the state of Massachusetts can mandate that citizens get the smallpox vaccine. And they said, if you can do that, of course universities may mandate COVID vaccination, and they also went into a lot more detail. It's a really excellent decision. I think it shows the courts are going to make sure that reason prevails. But we have to make more of a fuss.
And actually we trust in science. We should put that on our dollar bill, shouldn't we? So in the U.S. Senate, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is condemning anti-atheist bigotry of the junior senator from Louisiana, and we're asking him to apologize to the approximately 30 million atheists and agnostics in America. And it was on July 28th when there was the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing of a nominee for U.S. Assistant Attorney General for Legal Policy. The nominee's name is Hampton Dellinger. Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana peppered this nominee with hostile questions about a lot of things, abortion and Twitter and God. And then he asked him, "Do you believe in God?" He snarled when he said that, letting his anger show, because Kennedy has a history of what he calls pro-life and pro-religious opinions. This amounts to a religious test for public office. And it is appropriate to ask questions about religion if the nominee brought it up before and made it, like if a religious nominee was saying, "My faith prohibits me from doing this or that," then it would be okay for a senator to ask that question. But here, out of the blue, asking if this nominee believes in God really is a violation of state-church separation.
Yeah, and ironically, the nominee, Dellinger, has a Catholic background. But it shows that they're trying to stigmatize atheism.
Yeah. So we're complaining also, not just at the Senate, but around the country. We're complaining about a police department in California, in Rio Vista, California. They have just reinstituted a chaplaincy. They've revitalized it. And now they have sworn in a Father Mervin Concepcion. They've sworn in other chaplains. And we sent them a letter complaining that it's unconstitutional for a secular police department to have a religious chaplaincy. So because a significant portion of the community that they are serving is non-religious. So,
but even if all of them were religious, they still shouldn't have a chaplaincy because they have a secular government.
But it does show the harm.
Right.
And you know, chaplains can exist as a perhaps reasonable accommodation, like in the military, when there's no other choice. But in this case, we're asking them to stop that. We had a victory in Ohio. A school board in Ohio was opening with prayer. A Canton Board of Education, our legal fellow Joseph McDonald wrote a letter complaining about that. And they have stopped. You can read our press release on that. But
and that's a big victory. They do have an appeals court decision in the Sixth Circuit telling them they can't pray. But still, they acquiesced quickly. And so that was good to see that they're going to teach the right lesson to students to obey the Constitution and not to be proselytizing and exclusionary.
And in the news, it said the president of the school board stopped the practice after receiving a letter from the Freedom from Religion Foundation. So that's a lot of what our attorneys are busy doing.
And Dan, didn't you find a funny segment about a pilot talking about masking during COVID? I think we have time to run that.
Oh, I think we do. Yeah, talking about masks. Do you have that, Grant, the one that says pilot mask remarks? This is a pilot talking to the plane, and somebody on the plane recorded
talking to the
passengers
on the
plane. And I think they were heading to Chicago.
There is not an eye roll that you can give me that I haven't seen 750,000 times in the last year. I know you don't like them. I don't like them either. We have to wear them. It's a rule. It's not a political statement. It's not me taking your rights away. It's not me exerting my will on you, etc., etc. All the rhetoric that I hear, I don't want to hear it anymore. I get it. It's just a rule, and if we don't have rules, we have anarchy. So let's just go with the 1 hour and 43 minutes of masks that you can get individually, but when you're up and about, when you're not supposed to be, you are a danger to my crew, and I love them more than you. I spend more time with them before saying happy wife, happy life. That's exactly how I roll. You listen to what I have to say, I look really cool in front of them. After all, look at me. I'm a man in polyester pants and a short sleeve dress shirt. Cool is not exactly my middle name right now. Car on the way home. You can't eat. You can take your mask down and eat, but you have to put it back up. If you were smart, you would have went to Costco and bought the 7-pound bag of potato chips that would have lasted you 1 hour and 43 minutes. But you didn't do that. You went to Hudson News and bought the Cheetos, and that's going to last two, and most of you have already eaten those. So anyway, I think you understand where I'm trying to get. Let's get there as quickly and safely as possible, and let's go to Chicago.
Well, that's the word, quickly and safely as possible.
Right, and of course, public transportation all requires masking, and we wouldn't probably need to be masking anymore if we just had people rolling up their sleeves and getting the vaccine. I mean, possibly when we're still dealing with children, the transportation would be required. And the good news is that the Pfizer vaccine is expected to be fully approved by the FDA by September, early September, if not before Labor Day. And hopefully by October, if not earlier, children until the age of 5. It looks like babies will be in October or November. So I think that our country can get rid of this pandemic, or, well, we can start helping around the world with a little cooperation, a little bit of trusting in science.
Yeah, we don't believe in miracles, but we do trust in science. So we're going to take a break here. After the break, we're going to hear a song that's inspired by the great 19th century agnostic orator Robert G. Ingersoll, whose birthday is coming up this week. And then after that, we're going to talk with someone we've had on the show before, Candace Gorham. She's an ex-minister. She's now an atheist, and she's a mental health counselor. We talked about one of her earlier books before, The Ebony Exodus Project, How Black Women Are Leaving Religion. But she has a new book out now. It's called On Death, Dying, and Disbelief. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom from Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others happy. The time to be happy is now.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. That is Dan Barker singing the words of Robert Ingersoll, accompanied by a very adorable children's chorus.
Next week is the anniversary of the birth date of Robert Greene Ingersoll, the great agnostic orator who became the best-known advocate of free thought in the 19th century. Robert Ingersoll was born August 11, 1833.
Ingersoll, of course, wrote many books, did so many popular lectures. He was on the lecture circuit, often speaking to many thousands of people in outdoor settings when we did not have PA systems. Some of Ingersoll's better-known short aphorisms include, "All religions are inconsistent with mental freedom." He said, "Shakespeare is my Bible, Burns my hymn book." Ingersoll also said, "I do not believe in putting out the sun to keep weeds from growing."
And one of our favorites, which appears on FFRF's debaptismal certificate, which you can buy, by the way, or you can get, by
you
the
get
way.
You can download a free copy.
Yeah. It says, "With soap, baptism is a good thing."
We actually have a recording of Ingersoll's voice. Shortly before he died in 1899, Robert Ingersoll visited the New Jersey laboratories of Thomas Edison, another freethinker, who asked him to speak several short speeches into one of the early cylinder-style phonographs. So these are some of the oldest recordings in the historic RCA vault.
This is the oldest recording in their vault. This recording we're going to hear is really scratchy, and it's old, and all the low tones of his rich voice are missing. It's really hard to understand it. So before we play it, let me just read what he says. "While I am opposed to all orthodox creeds, I have a creed myself, and my creed is this. Happiness is the only good. The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others so. This creed is somewhat short, but it's long enough for this life, strong enough for this world. If there is another world, when we get there, we can make another creed. But this creed certainly will do for this life."
So now let's hear Robert G. Ingersoll himself reading those words.
"While I am opposed to all orthodox creeds, I have a creed myself. And my creed is this. Happiness is the only good. The time to be happy is now. The place
about this world. If there is another world, when we get there, we can make another treaty. But this certainly will do for this life.
Yeah, so you can say that again. That was pretty hard to understand. So now let's hear Ingersoll's Creed as Dan has set it to music.
The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others happy. The time to be happy is now. Justice is the only worship. Love is the only creed. Ignorance is the only slavery. Happiness is the only good. The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others happy. The time to be happy is now.
We're going to take a break. Stay tuned for Candace Gorham, author of On Death, Dying, and Disbelief. Annie Laurie and I will be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Candace Gorham is a former ordained minister. She's now an atheist activist, and she writes on issues related to religion, to secular social justice, and the African American community. She's worked as a licensed mental health counselor for more than 10 years. Her primary focus is on at-risk youth and family therapy. And she emphasizes, she has an emphasis on depression, anxiety, and mood disorders.
Candace is a member of the Black Humanist Alliance of the American Humanist Association, the Secular Therapist Project, the Clergy Project, and the Secular Student Alliance's Speaker Bureau. We talked with Candace on this show in 2013 about her first book, The Ebony Exodus Project. What's the subtitle of that, Candace? Are you there, Candace?
Yes, it's the Ebony Exodus Project, Why Some Black Women Are Walking Out on Religion and Others Should Too.
I love that subtitle. And now you have a new book, Candace, called On Death, Dying, and Disbelief, and it's published by Pitchstone Publications. Candace lives in North Carolina with her teenage daughter. Thank you for joining us after all these years again, Candace.
Yes, I'm happy to be here. Be back.
So you're a mental health counselor, and which is very important, you know, real work. Before that, you were doing fake work. You were a minister.
and you can say that as a former minister.
I can
yourself.
Say that myself because I, you know, like Candace, I'm also with the clergy project. But remind our listeners, what kind of preacher were you, and briefly, why did you leave?
Mm-hmm. So I was in one of those, it was a non-denominational church, but it was one of the kind. It was a, you know, casting out demons, fasting, praying, you know, fasting for no food, just water, 10 days at a time.
Wow.
You know, demons everywhere. You know, what you watch a movie and you'll get possessed by a demon and then you'll need to go through a deliverance process. And, you know, anything can send you to hell. It was one of those kinds of fire and brimstone. It was also prosperity gospel was a big thing. You know, we were giving all of our money to the church constantly. It was one of the more extreme. It was on the more extreme, you know, scale of things.
It sounds abusive.
And it definitely had a lot of abusive qualities going on. And so I got out of it. I mean, really, I studied my way out of religion. I got out of the ministry side of things because the church that I was a minister in actually closed. And so it was easy. That part was easy. But then why I actually left religion in general was, I mean, it was study. It was study. I had more questions. I was going through a lot of things in my life and I felt like, you know, I must be doing something wrong. I'm disconnected from God in some way. I'm disconnected from what is the right thing that I'm supposed to be doing. So I thought, let me study more. Let me study harder. Let me consider new materials and new texts that I hadn't ever considered before. And so as I studied more and as I did more research, I basically studied my way out of my beliefs. So that was, it was not a emotional thing. I got angry with God or anything like that. It was genuinely an intellectual process that led to me becoming a non-believer and an atheist.
So what, Candace, led you to write your new book about grief and dying?
Mm-hmm. So what happened in 2019, my high school sweetheart died. He died in a car accident and complications from the car accident. He didn't die in the car accident. He died about 2 weeks later. And you know, we were high school sweethearts, we reconnected years later and we became actually pretty close again. And so, you know, he was extremely important to me. And I talk in the book a little bit more about our relationship and how our relationship evolved, you know, when we reconnected, you know, 20 years later. And so when he died, I mean, I was completely devastated and distraught, and you know, it was horrible. And so at the 1 year anniversary of his death, I just felt like I need to do something. You know, there was something in me, I was just, you know, felt overwhelmed. I felt like I need to see, you know, how can I get this grief out of me. And around that same time, another friend of mine had also lost somebody very important to her, you know, somebody very important to her. And she and I would talk, and it just got me thinking about, you know, we non-believers need resources for when we're going through grief. And I just started, you know, ideas started coming to me about, well, what things have been helping me over the, you know, over the past year. And then, of course, as a mental health counselor, you know, I it just kind of made sense to me to sort of start putting these thoughts down, and it just evolved into a book and a project that I wanted to, you know, dedicate to my sweetheart.
And then, of course, you worked on it during the pandemic, so
yes.
Extra meaning. And I think what you say in your preface is that there needs to be more support for grieving non-theists.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That you say that people are hurting, they're hungry for this information, and this is certainly something that we see at the Freedom From Religion Foundation in terms of just ideas on having, making sure that funerals or memorial services are secular. So, mm-hmm. So we have a site on that, secular memorials and funerals without God, and we have a new brochure going out.
Well, we need to add her book to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need
we'll add
it.
Your book to this, to our website.
So, Candace, your book, I really enjoyed the book. It's a combination of very useful, I guess, really professional advice, but mixed with just a very, you know, deep personal stories that you're telling, because ultimately it's human stories. And as I was reading it, I was kind of curious there, because these asterisks kept popping up and with no explanation for a while. But then you later do explain, what were all these asterisks in the text of your book?
So, yeah, I mean, as I said, I was only a year into my grieving process. My sweetheart had only died a year prior to when I started writing the book. And, I mean, literally I started writing around the one-year mark. And so, you know, if you know anything about grief, those anniversaries are just some of the roughest times, right? So I was really going through it as I was sitting down trying to write this book. I mean, it wasn't just hard to write the book because the topic was hard. It was hard to write the book because his birthday was happening, Father's Day was happening, the actual anniversary of the death was happening. I mean, a lot was going on at that time. So, I mean, my emotions were really raw as I was writing the book. And so the asterisks in the book were literally places where, as I was writing, I was crying. And so it was just sort of a way for me to sort of make it, and I say in the book that it's kind of, like you said, it's half, you know, it's professional material, but it's also half diary. You know, it's half my really personal experiences. You know, there's poetry in there. There's, you know, references, like literary of discussion of, you know, but Robert Frost poetry, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of a lot of other types of material in there. So that was just sort of another way that I felt like was sort of like a tribute to my heart, my sweetheart, to say, you know, to continue to mark that pain. And then I felt like it was also a way to connect to other grievers as well.
Yeah, because,
you know, other people in mourning, I think, will appreciate that level of connection as well.
And that's one of the tips that you give, which you have 10 tips in the book, and one of them is cry, and then cry some more. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. We have to take a break in a couple minutes, but let's try to get through one or two of these tips and then try to do the rest after the break. So tip mm-hmm. number one is, you say, yes, you can grieve without there being deeper supernatural meaning. So tell us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the big things is, you know, death and grief and all of this stuff is often relegated to the realm of spiritual, right? You assume that a person dies and they go to heaven, they become an angel, or, you know, their spirit walks among us, there's ghosts of dead people, you know. So death is often mourning, all this stuff is often relegated to the realm of the spiritual. You got God who then steps in and all this stuff becomes super religious. And so I feel like when we go through these experiences, we begin to have experiences, we begin to dream about the person, or we think we hear the person's voice, you know, when we around us, or you know, we want to talk to the person. And, you know, people often say, well, talk to them, they can hear you, you know. Or, yeah, you know, you still sense that person's presence because they are still there. Or, you know, God is listening to you. Or this, you know, you start to get that type of advice, or people start talking to you in very supernatural spiritual language when you're grieving. And so one of the things that I wanted to normalize was that you will have these experiences, and people, you know, and just because you're having an experience, just because you felt like you heard the person's voice, does not necessarily mean that you are having a supernatural experience. It does. It also doesn't mean you're experiencing psychosis either. You know, it just is a function of how grieved you are, you know. And if you want to, you know, talk to the deceased, talk to the deceased. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you suddenly have become a believer who believes that this person is in heaven listening to you. Again, it's a function of your grief, and it's something that you got to get out of you. And so that's sort of what I wanted to do in that tip, is to normalize experiences that are typically considered to be spiritual experiences, but really, in my opinion, are just a function of how deep and how intense grief can be. And to sort of say, you know, once the grief starts to resolve, those experiences and those feelings and those behaviors will also begin to resolve as well. And
well, that happened to my dad when my mom died. My dad was an atheist, and he heard her voice, and he talked to her, and he knew it was an illusion, but it was part of his grieving process to just talk through all that. So we're talking with Candace Gorham, author of the new book On Death, Dying, and Disbelief. And when we come back, Candace, I want to ask about how we should deal with our religious loved ones who are going through the same experience with us. We'll be back in a minute. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker, and we're continuing our talk with Candace Gorham. She's a former minister. She's a licensed mental health counselor. She's written some books, including her newest book. It's called On Death, Dying, and Disbelief, Especially How Do Nonbelievers Handle Death and Dying. A wonderful book, Candace. And it's available now for pre-order, I understand. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
From Pitchstone. So tip number two in the book says, be patient with your spiritual loved ones. Because when a death happens, there's a whole family involved usually. And nonbelievers and believers are mixed together. So what do you mean by being patient with your spiritual loved ones?
Mm-hmm. I think that the main point there is that, you know, we as nonbelievers, a lot of times we can get pretty impatient, you know, when we're dealing with believers and the stuff that they say and talking about their religious beliefs and, you know, their spiritual beliefs. And so I talk about how, you know, just like we don't want our grieving process interrupted, you know, let's not interrupt anybody else's grieving process. And I also make specific reference to times when you're aware that a person maybe was a non-believer. Just because a person was a non-believer does not mean that we should interrupt, again, the believer's grieving process. And, you know, like I said, just let them have their grief and let them have their process and whatever tools they need, if they're depending on prayer, if they're depending on whatever they're depending on to get through their process, you know, let them have it and don't waste your precious little resources, you know, emotional resources on correcting them or dealing with them. If you need to just separate yourself from them, just separate yourself from them, you know, or if they're giving you advice that you don't like, you know, just take what you take, leave what you don't leave. Or again, like I said, separate yourself from them, but try to recognize that they're grieving just like you are, and they have their own process just like you do.
when my mom died, we had a memorial by the graveside, and one of the things I said, and there were a lot of religious relatives there, was that, well, Mom does live on. She lives on in our memories. She lives on in the lingering effects of the deeds she has done. She lived on in her values. And some of the religious people took that like, well, she also lives on in heaven. But we can just use some of the same kind of terminology, but we're talking about totally different things. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So, but of course, sometimes what people say, especially if it's your child or your parent, somebody that it's your memorial service for them, sometimes that can be very hurtful, though, the religious thing.
Oh.
Correct.
Right. Now, I do not suggest at all that you, and I do say that in the book, like, you know, if people are being offensive or if they're clearly, you know, trying to push something on you or if they're doing it in an inappropriate setting, you know, then absolutely stand up for yourself. Absolutely, you know, put them in their place, you know, to not just sort of take whatever they're giving you. Or like you said, if you're having a secular memorial, then absolutely it'd be inappropriate for religious people to stand up and spout religious stuff during a secular memorial. So I do talk about setting boundaries as well.
That's good. And then you say reconnect with nature. Why? Mm-hmm.
Tip number 6, reconnect with nature.
Yeah, I think that being in nature, there's research that talks about how being in nature has real, you know, real measurable impacts on our physical health and, you know, as well as our mental and emotional health. And so I talk about that research and that science in that chapter a little bit. And I know for me personally, I mean, throughout the book, I talk about my personal connection with nature and hiking and, you know, camping and all the things that I do in nature on a regular basis. And just how healing that can be to be in nature, because it, you know, it reminds us of the circle of life. I mean, that's what life is just a natural process. And, you know, so I talk about really the importance of being in nature, and I go into the research about why and how that is so important to our healing process. And I really believe that, you know, everybody should take some time to spend some time in the natural world and not just be cooped up in our homes all the time.
And, of course, a lot of people took refuge during the worst of the pandemic, the lockdowns, in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So same idea. So we skipped over some of your tips. You say take care of your physical self, take care of you, which is very important. You say attend to your psychological and emotional needs.
Mm-hmm.
And you say there's no time limit on grief. Be patient with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Postpone major decisions. And then let's talk about tip number 8, do something in their honor.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I talk about a variety of things that you could do. You know, people do, you know, it could be something as simple as going out to their favorite restaurant, you know, to eat, to say, hey, I'm doing this in, you know, to remember them. Or it could be write a book in their honor. You know, there's something about, you know, doing things to honor another person that makes us feel better. I also mentioned in the book about mirror neurons and how when we do something good for, you know, when we see other people happy, it makes us happy. And when we do good things for other people, it makes us feel better. And whether that person is there or not, doing something good for somebody else can make us feel better, whether that person is there to appreciate that thing or not.
Well, so before we brought you on, Candace, we were also observing the birth date of Robert Ingersoll in his mm-hmm. famous lines, that the way to be happy is to make someone happy. Same idea mm-hmm. as what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of goes along yeah. with that. And then we mentioned cry, and cry some more, but let's hear a little bit more about why you recommend that.
Yeah, so one of the things I do in the book is I do try to weave in as much, you know, weave in science and that stuff as much as possible, so it's not just me talking. And so one of the things that I do in that chapter as well is I talk about the research that's coming out about the benefits of crying. You know, and so there's actually quite a bit of research that talks about the ways in which we, you know, there's, you know, it's preliminary. Some of it is preliminary research, but it talks about the hormones that we secrete in our tears, or the ways in which something as simple as sobbing actually cools the body temperature, or the, you know, the temperature in the head temperature. And, you know, things like, you know, when you're crying, you're releasing, like I said, certain types of hormones, certain types of brain, I mean, certain types of chemicals. And so there's actually a good amount of research that says that crying is actually good for you. The thing about it, though, is that there's also research that says your attitude about crying also plays a big role in the relief that you do or don't receive from the crying. So if your attitude is crying is a bad thing, then it's probably not going to bring you much relief. But if your attitude is that I'm going to feel better after I cry, then you may feel better after you cry. And so that's, and then, and of course I do say, like, if you're suffering from a major depression episode, then you need to attend to that major depression episode and maybe just sitting around, you know, you do have to be mindful of those things. But if you're the type of person who suppresses your tears, who suppresses crying, then you may be the candidate of the, for the person who, actually needs to tap into that and be okay with crying. And then just to remind, again, to normalize that, you know, you may cry a lot. You know, for me, I literally, the minute my eyes popped open every morning, I would break into tears.
Well, we're out of time, Candace. I'm so sorry about that.
But we didn't get to tip number 10, but that means you're going to have to order Candace's book.
Yes.
Candace Gorham's book is called On Death, Dying, and Disbelief, which you can pre-order now. Thank you so much, Candace, for being on Free Thought Radio today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening in Philadelphia to WOOM, in Madison, Wisconsin to WMUU, WIDE, in Janesville, Wisconsin to WADR, in Central Texas, KEOS, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, and WOOL Radio in Vermont, New Hampshire, and WRFI in Ithaca, New York. And hello to all you podcast listeners. Give us a thumbs up on your provider and tell people, your friends and relatives, to visit us at fffrf.org/radio.
And you can ask for more information, including a copy of Free Thought Today, FFRF's newspaper. You can request our new brochure. It's just at the printer, on having Funerals Without God and Secular Memorials. You can join us at fffrf.org. We would love your support, not just for our radio, but for all our work to keep religion out of government. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday